Welcome to the BCMA Podcast. As museums, galleries, and cultural organizations across British Columbia reopen their doors to the public, we're checking in with members to see how their first few weeks have gone and to share these experiences with other organizations who are in the process of reopening. Today, I'm joined by Sarah Theophilus, Head of Retail and Operations, and Courtney Zelstra, Head of Art and Visitor Experience at the Bateman Foundation in Victoria. The Bateman Foundation reopened on June 2nd, and it's been a couple of weeks now, and I'm just wondering, how have the past 2 weeks been for you?
So they've been really good. They have been quieter than we would normally be this time of year, and I think, of course, there's some obvious things as to why that would be. You know, we're in the Inner Harbor, and we usually have a lot of tourists this time of year, so it has been slower. But still, we've had people every day, which has really been good to see. And same with in the gift shop as well.
And the people that are joining you, would you say those people are regulars, or are you still getting some people that haven't been to the site, or maybe haven't been in a while? How would you characterize the type of visitors you're getting?
Yeah, that's a really great question. We're definitely seeing members who, when we opened, we did send out a membership email, and I believe a press release as well. So we are seeing our members that are were excited for us to open and who are waiting to come in, and that was really nice. When we shut down in March, we were 2 weeks into a brand new exhibit that we had just opened. So we have been seeing, again, members who are coming specifically who hadn't even had a chance to see that exhibit yet. I would say we haven't had as many walk-bys as we would normally have. I think we're definitely getting people who specifically know we're open and have been here before who have mostly been coming in, I would say.
I think I'd agree. From what I hear from the staff, they're seeing locals coming in, people who are curious about castaways. In the gift shop, we're seeing people coming in who are wanting to support local artists because we've got quite a few little local artist pieces in there. So they wanted to come in and purchase those in any way they can. And people who are just wandering downtown, I think a lot of people are quite curious to see what's open yet and where, and just exploring around the Inner Harbour.
And for people that maybe aren't familiar with your site or haven't visited Victoria in a while, would you mind describing kind of the layout, location, what kind of physical space you're dealing with?
We're in the steamship terminal down in the Inner Harbour. We share the building with the steamship restaurant and up until recently V2V Vacations. Our gift shop is a small space on the main floor. There's three different entrances to the building, so it's quite interesting dealing with a heritage building. It's a beautiful building to be in. We have this gorgeous view and perfect location across from the Parliament, but it means we're quite challenged in terms of floor plan. So downstairs we have a small gift shop, and then you go up the stairs to the main gallery, which is all of the second level. And that's our, probably Courtney can speak more to that, but that's where we have our main exhibits and our temporary exhibits, our permanent exhibits of Robert Bateman.
Yeah, and with one of the challenges of being in a heritage building is we have a couple entrances into the building and then two entrances into the gallery. So one of the things Sarah and I talked a lot about was, can we have an entrance only and an exit only in our space? And we did not go ahead and do that. It wasn't really possible in our space because our one entrance is specifically accessibility and has the elevator. And so we couldn't say you couldn't come up or just down that side. So we really did have to have a long discussion about how much could we just trust the public to police themselves in things like elevators and on stairwells. And I think because the grocery stores and all the other public places have been doing really good about that stuff, I think most people are really thinking that way and know that they need to be careful in those areas. So far those places have not been an issue for us, which hopefully continues to go that way. But then once you get up into the gallery, then we do, have some social distance cues and some wayfinding just to help navigate the space, as well as some signage when you first get into the space talking about how we want you to move about the space as well.
And down in the gift shop as well, we've limited to just one person or one social group because it's quite a small space. So we've tried to make it as clear as possible as you enter each space, what the limits are in that space, how we would hope you would distance yourself in that space, not bringing, say, not having coat racks, things like that, so that you're stopping those places where people might be cross-pollinating, if you will, and coming in contact with the same areas. So, and we've also increased cleaning the building. GVHA has also brought in extra cleaning schedules so that the washrooms are clean, because that's another issue. Whether people are using those, is it people coming in off the street, or can we keep it to just staff and visitors to the gallery? Now, with the restaurant reopening, that adds another element. So for anybody who has an organization that's sharing a space, you really have to work with the other company sharing a space to see their needs and your needs, and how can you wayfind with them so that traffic flows for everybody correctly and nobody is held up in a space and can't move forward.
That's a great point, because so many galleries, museums, archives across the province are in shared spaces, whether it's with a library or another not-for-profit organization, or in a multi-use space like your own. Yeah. So are there any tips you'd offer about working with your space mates?
I think just as much communication as possible and just being honest. Thankfully, everybody's in the same circumstance simultaneously, so everybody's wanting to solve the same problems together. And just as you don't want people to be stopped from coming into your area, they don't want you preventing people from coming into their area, and vice versa. So just laying out, I think the first thing, if you start with what you need and where your customers really need to go, and then approach them, and hopefully they'll have a plan in place, and then try to find a middle ground, seem to work well for us.
Yeah, and I think too, for us in the gallery as well, and with the shared building, with along with communication, it, you know, was willing to change if we had to. And I think you create a policy and you create a strategy on how you want things to go, but then it's just saying to the staff and to other people in the building, like, this might not work, and so we need you to tell us that it's not going to work, and then we're going to figure out what the solution is. And so be willing to constantly change, because again, like, we're a team and we're a small group and we rely on everyone for help right now.
And I think what we kept in mind too, after visiting some of the galleries and seeing some of the plans that were outlaid in European galleries, and certainly the big galleries and the big places must have much more robust plans. But for smaller outfits like ourselves and most nonprofits, just appreciating that other places, everything doesn't have to be perfect right up front. Yeah. It can be put together, because we're all going through something completely unprecedented. So being willing to change and being kind to yourself and your team to not absolutely get it right first time out of the gate. I think we did a really good job and we haven't had to adjust too much, but don't expect to get everything right, and understand that the community around you wants you to do well, and they're going to be there for you as well. Everybody wants everybody to succeed, and you just adapt as you move forward.
And we put that language, you know, in our press release and in our on our website. We kind of use that kind of language of being kind and compassionate and just like having some patience with us. And I think everyone is really understanding, because they understand it's weird right now. And
yeah,
you do.
And I love that emphasis on flexibility, because I find that personally, like, what may be clear to me might be not clear at all to someone else. And when you're making signage or wayfaring, like, you might go in thinking, oh yeah, this totally makes sense, and then you open it to the public and people are like, oh, like, we don't know what to do, or I was interpreting this differently. Have you been finding anything that you did in your preparations that the public has responded to differently than anticipated?
Not really, to be honest, although I did have an experience today, and I think it just goes to show, or because of what everyone else is doing out there, and I touched on this before, was we didn't designate an entrance and an exit. You can exit and enter on both sides. And so I had a customer ask me today, like, which way do I go now? And I was like, oh, well, if you want to go to the gift shop, you just go down the stairs. And she kind of looked at me like, but am I allowed to go down the stairs? And it was like, oh yeah, okay, totally, yeah. So that was one thing, because I think people are so used to looking for lines, looking for direction. And we kind of went, we have it, but we didn't go like super heavy on it either. And so people, I think, weren't sure exactly which way they should go.
And has there been anything that's worked better than expected? Things that you thought might be pain points that ended up not being a problem?
I think the cleaning schedule, and we were worrying quite a bit about gloves and PPE and hand washing and making sure things were sanitized and making sure it was safe for the public to come in. And I think for me, and certainly the staff I've spoken to, it's gone much more smoothly than we anticipated. And it's been more relaxed than we anticipated. Keeping attentive at all times, but it's just become, I think perhaps because we've all been adapting to this for so long and washing our hands every time we come home, it seems to have been a natural flow for the staff to come back. We're on the front lines and just get straight into a schedule of cleaning. It seems to have gone really smoothly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And one thing that it's kind of along these lines of something that we had not put a lot of thought into because we didn't think it would be an issue, but we did think about it, was we've made the decision to be admission by donation for the first month as we try this out. So we didn't really have to sell tickets or anything, but we have the option, we've let this know in our signage that we would take donations through a card, because we can easily do that with our point of sale. So we weren't actually anticipating cash to be coming in, but we do have a donation box out. We made the decision to keep it out. And I would say right now, over 90% of the people coming through are putting a $5 in or a $20 in to the cash box. And so now it's been this thought of like, okay, what's the clean, like, how do we deal with cash? Like, it's, you know, is it dirty? Like, how do we need to clean it? And so we did have to kind of think more heavily on a system of how we were going to deal with more cash than we were expecting.
Yeah, that was quite a surprise, given there's been a push in quite a few places to move to tap or card. Mm-hmm. But it's lovely to see that people are willing to donate to come in and support the organization.
That's one of the interesting cultural spin-offs I've been finding of all of this, is how it's changed my own personal relationship with cash. It's been interesting to see just how this, in such a short amount of time, has changed how people respond to things that were totally commonplace before.
It really is, yeah. And I think in all organizations that I've seen, there's very few people that won't accept cash. And we certainly made the decision that we would not go that route, because there's a lot of people who don't have access to credit cards and debit cards. And you don't, you know, particularly in a gallery environment, you're wanting to be there for everybody in the community, particularly now when people need places where they can go and relax. And we didn't want to isolate one section of the population. At that point, of course, we thought it would just be a small percentage. We didn't realize it would be most people coming in would use cash.
And when you were preparing to reopen, what kind of training and orientation did you do with staff and volunteers? How did you get them on board with the new protocol?
It was a good 3 weeks of heavy research and creating a manual, a procedure manual and a policy manual around behavior in each space. We went into great detail, and that's what we approached staff with. So we sent that to them and asked them, you know, how are you comfortable coming back? Are you okay working on the front lines? Is there anything you'd like to change? So they were quite familiar with that document. The staff who chose to come back were quite familiar with that document by the time they got to the gallery the first day back, mm-hmm. which was wonderful. It was amazing to welcome people back after not seeing them for so long. And then we just ran through with each person where they would be getting their supplies from, because it was, again, even in the document, we went into where the supplies would be kept, so that if at any time a manager or a supervisor isn't available, they always have that document to rely on to give them all their guidance. But we basically ran through everything, because those first couple of days, you don't see too many people coming through. It was a perfect opportunity to constantly be readjusting and going through all the minutiae and the details of the policy manual and how to protect everybody.
Based upon how your reopening's gone so far, what's one piece of advice you'd share for other sites that are working on their own reopening plans?
Yeah, I can speak to that. I think the big thing, and we talked about this, is just to really involve your staff. As for us especially, you know, Sarah and I manage the staff, and we don't generally work in those areas. So it's all great and fine for us to come up with these, the way that the space will work and the way that the processes will work, but you have to involve the staff who are going to be actually sitting in that space and monitoring that space and working in the space. So if you're not involving them, then you're going to miss things. And so I think, and so it's just communication and working as a team, also just taking your time. And if you think you've gone above and beyond, it's okay. Like, then you have it in place, and then you might decide that was too much, or maybe it wasn't enough. So yeah, just taking your time. Also, one thing I can speak to is that it can be really kind of overwhelming, and it seems like it's going to be this really hard thing, but the opening day it was just really calm and it just kind of happened. And I think we built it up and it ended up just being this really calm kind of great opening, which was great. But I think it's also because we worked really hard to make sure we were covered where we needed to be.
I think so. That's what it was. We worked really, really hard to make sure that first day was a success. And then you could take a breath and you could wait and hope for people to come through. And the people who did come through, it was just delightful to be able to welcome someone back into the space again, for sure. But as Courtney said, I think it's about communication and preparedness. We spent a long time poring over WorkSafe BC, Health BC, going to the WHO and writing down. All of those sites have some really good signage you can use. And they also have detailed suggestions for each type of organization on how you can do it. And then we went through Chamber of Commerce, had some really good suggestions as well, and museum associations around the world. So there's a lot of information out there. It's just a matter of passing it out to decide what you can do in your space, because not everybody can do everything and not everybody needs to do everything as well. Just looking around your own community to see how a coffee shop, for example, one of my colleagues and I went to yesterday, they had figured out the most perfect way to use their space and it was flawless. And I thought, that's beautiful. It's wonderful to see people succeeding so well in adapting so severely to the new opportunities. Mm-hmm. And I think the other thing to think about is to try to take this as an opportunity as well. It's a very unique opportunity to try to rethink parts of your organization that you maybe didn't have time or weren't forced to rethink before, and try to become leaner and meaner and stronger and really get down to your core initiatives and use those to propel you forward when you're in at this most important sort of restarting and reopening.
So now that you've been open a couple weeks and we're starting to get into the summer, how do you think the summer is going to go? What kind of things are on the horizon for you?
Well, for me, especially in the gallery, now that kind of opening is out of the way and we can kind of move forward, a big thing, and you know, Sarah was just kind of talking about this, is planning for what we can do in terms of programming and what is safe and what we're allowed to do in terms of our provincial standards with groups of people. And so we're excited to kind of, you know, small nonprofits, I think most can speak to this. Sometimes you do a lot of last minute things, and that's going to really slow us down and make us realize that we need to think really, really carefully and make sure our program is really good and is safe and just is exactly what we want to do this year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think also in terms of revenue generation for galleries that have a gift shop, we're hoping to see some people come through, but obviously in the summertime, most of our sales in the gift shop come through tourists. So we've done a major push to make sure that all our bestsellers and our local artists are on our website. So if a gallery has a website, put as much time as you can into that site and get yourself out there on a global stage, because that seems to be working really well. And by all accounts, more and more consumers will be buying online, and this will be a permanent behavior change. So we've seen really, really good sales come through our website during the close down, which was a great surprise, because we thought people would be nervous to spend money because there isn't as much money to go around and a lot of people are out of work. But it's a way of supporting a nonprofit and also having a lovely gift to remember your donation to that nonprofit. If you don't have a website, there are some wonderful tools out there to create one for free. You don't necessarily need a webmaster. You know, research possibilities, even just get a couple of things up there so that you have an online presence. And then you can slowly build on that. And it's a type of revenue that will keep coming in whether or not you have to reclose in the fall. But mm-hmm. It's something to develop for sure if you can.
That's a great suggestion, because we've, in talking to members, have heard a lot about increased web hits from their communities, higher rates of social media following. And it seems like mm-hmm. communities have been trying to find ways to connect with cultural organizations during the closures. So I think any kind of online presence that organizations can develop right now will be really well received by their community.
Yeah, and for us early on with our programming, I think for most cultural institutions during that first month, it was just about getting as much as you could resource-wise online for free. And we made a conscious decision pretty early on, and only with one program, to actually ask for a donation. And so we had three-tiered tickets that were as low as $5 and as high as $20 for one of our online webinars. And we were nervous about it at first because we thought, you know, it's just a good balance of having some money coming in and also having enough free resources out there. And we were surprised. I mean, we had a great turnout the first webinar that we did, and got a little bit of revenue from that.
Well, that was it for the prepared questions. Is there anything else you would like to share as far as your reopening has gone?
I'd also suggest people just reach out to, which I think is already happening, reach out to the other nonprofits and businesses in your community. For example, our vinyls, we were contacted by a couple of companies, and we contacted a couple of companies who were very willing to donate vinyls so that we didn't have to pay for printing. Our landlords very kindly printed some signage for the outside of the building. Do get in touch with your landlords and see if they can apply for the rental subsidy program. Do make sure that you're applying for every grant and subsidy you can to keep you going through this. And just find as many partnerships as you can to support each other.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for your time today. It's been fascinating hearing about how your organization's approached reopening. And it's really inspiring to hear that the community is responding and it's coming to your site. If people want to learn more about the Bateman Foundation, where can they find you?
They can find us online, batemanfoundation.org, as well as on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, I believe.